Robert Scott Bell Show.
So glad to be here. We got a big, the biggest show ever. I've never had so many guests on at one time. In hour two, we got six homeopaths joining me and a mystery guest whose case the GNHS team is taking, and we're going to do live on the air. First hour up, we got Diane Miller is going to be joining us via phone. It's her birthday today, and she is worth celebrating every day of the year, 365, because she's, you know, talk about a health freedom hero with National Health Freedom Coalition, National Health Freedom Action, and more. And boy, oh boy, she loves homeopathy too. And it just, it thematically, it fits so, so well today. So excited. And by the way, word on the street is Super Don did make it back from the beach. He didn't stay. He didn't say, I'm out of here, guys. He came back, thankfully. So Mark D and I are celebrating, even though we had a good time, couple of days. What is that when the something, the cat's away, the mice will play. We played. We had a good couple of shows for sure. We survived it. And thanks to Super D, and congratulations, 25 years celebrating that marriage. We'll hear probably more, maybe in the bonus round today, if not, hopefully tomorrow, from Super D and all that he did on that wonderful trip to the beach. So before we go there, I want to do, I open the each day's show typically with a news story that I think is relevant and maybe helpful. And this one comes from the, used to call it a blog, but it's a Substack of Katie Talento. And Katie, you know of, she was on this show. She was doing repentance work, if you will, for her efforts in the first Trump administration to stop Bobby Kennedy from working with Trump on a vaccine safety commission. We went through that. She went through that. And I believe she's doing good work trying to make amends and correct for the error of her ways back then. And we definitely have room for folks that go, you know what? I was on the wrong team. I'm joining you guys. Let's go health freedom. And so this Substack, the people versus the white coat cartel, is another great one. She's doing good work there. The doctor's lobby, they say, but makes hundreds of millions of dollars controlling the language of your medical bills. And now there's a new lawsuit threatening to burn down the business model, which is a good news story. Good news. Talk about a lawsuit. I'm not into lawsuits. They're no fun. But if you scroll down here, you'll see that she's referencing PRA. This is an article about it. PRA sues the AMA to make medical billing codes freely available to the public. And this was from Cynthia Fisher, which I'd love to get on if there's a way to do that. But she founded patientrightsadvocate.org, PRA, in 2017. And she's been all about transparency and pricing of all the things in the hospital and health system. And this drives the story into something I've talked about here. Very few places you've heard this, about the American Medical Association's ownership, if you will, or control of at least the CPT codes. These are the codes that are required by law in order for reimbursements to happen through the insurance game, whether it be private insurers, public-private partnerships, or government insurance schemes. I am not a big fan of pretty much any or all of those things, but I do recognize and acknowledge that the vast majority of Americans are kind of stuck and trapped in that system or those systems. So yes, I am an idealist. You've noticed that about me, but I'm also pragmatist. I also recognize that people are where they are, and I want to help them wherever they are. And maybe come on over to where I believe the water's warmer, less polluted, less toxic, and there's more honoring of the doctor-patient sacred relationship, which third-party interveners often screw up by definition. You know, my belief system, you know, health freedom is that, you know, whether you're a licensed physician or not, that you should be able to hang a shingle to help people in freedom, in full disclosure, with fully informed consent. But we have devolved into a nation that seemingly is so afraid of its own shadow that it needs permission slips from the government to operate. And the belief is that it's those permission slips that protect us from dangerous people, from bad products, from bad services. When the reality is, I would just like to know, what are the qualifications of the individual, doctor or not, that I would like to help me, or that I would maybe consider helping me? And I think that is adequate to the task of full disclosure. It's like, are you a doctor? So what kind? Are you accredited or not? You know, it's just like, let me decide, because I'm capable as an adult. Now, a lot of Americans, even though they're adults, they say, I can't figure this thing out. Let the government do it for me. And I think that is problematic over time, especially when the government then sanctions licensing boards to control the practice of a particular thing that becomes a monopoly. Even if there were good intentions, and arguably maybe there were some, maybe there were other nefarious schemes afoot with this idea. But right now we have a situation where the standard, or what we call standard of care in medicine, is substandard for most. And many of you have tried to seek out either doctors or non-doctors that are doing something better than the standard of care, whether they're licensed or not. Now, recognizing the current framework of the delivery of healthcare in America, even though much of it is not healthcare, I would say, all right, I acknowledge it's not great, it's not perfect, but what can we do to improve what we have right now until each of us goes to that point where, like, I don't want any third-party interveners. I just want to engage in a sacred relationship between a doctor of my choosing, if I'm the patient, or vice versa. We work together to help each other out, and we honor that relationship. And if there's a third-party presence to that sacred relationship, it would be God. That's my humble opinion. That's why it was called sacred. Nothing sacred about government, but God. Okay, follow me here. So I'm throwing that out there in this people versus the white coat cartel, because much of the physician community, not of their own making, they just go to medical school, they're accredited, they're Flexner Report, they graduate, and now there are a number of other accredited medical schools, including chiropractic and naturopathic and different things, that they can come out and get licenses, and they should be able to practice no problem, as long as they're not looking to exclude all others. May not be licensed, but as I said, accreditation, just tell me what it is that you do. How do you know what you do? And let me decide. And if you're being fraudulent, there are rules and regulations and laws against fraud in every state. That's not unique. It's not like a federal issue. Now, I bring this around because the federal issue comes into the management of these so-called CPT codes, insurance reimbursement, that all of the states then comply with for the most part. So that does ramp through the federal agencies and federal government. And this goes to the CPT codes, which I don't know if you knew, I've told you before, the American Medical Association, if they don't claim outright ownership of it, they manage it and they license out the ability to use it by the government, by other entities. And every time those codes are used, there is a fee that gets paid to the American Medical Association, which, by the way, represents significantly fewer than 20% of all medical doctors. DOs as well are welcome in it now. DOs were captured by the MD concept, even though DOs might have a little bit of different training, but oftentimes they come out and just write prescriptions for drugs too. So I throw this out as a bigger picture to say, what is this lawsuit all about? Because the CPT codes are basically, you know, kind of an electrified fence. You can't go out and around. And there are a few codes for chiropractic. There are a few codes for things that are outside. But for the most part, it's a gateway to keep you from things that you want to use: integrative, natural, holistic, maybe even homeopathic. Now, we have homeopaths on the show in hour two. Some are medical doctors, some are nurses, some are naturopathic doctors. And many of them do have licenses. And it's like, maybe they, if they had access to these quote-unquote CPT code expansions that the AMA will never agree to, they also could be part of that insurance plan. In other words, you would be able to go to them and have your insurance provider help cover it, minus deductible, whatever that would be. Whether you would perceive that's a good thing or bad thing, that's up to you. But I would like to see that you have access to that. How can we get that right now? And Super Don, if you don't mind, we're going to show the ABC Codes website right now, abccodes.com. And this is not part of that article that Katie Talento wrote or referenced in her Substack, but abccodes.com opens up the world of possibilities for integrative practitioners, even homeopaths and naturopaths and other holistic providers, to be reimbursed for what they're schooled and skilled to do for you. And those could be integrated immediately. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. knows about them. Bobby does. Dr. Oz knows about him. I was up there at the Maha meeting and I reiterated to Dr. Oz at that point as well. He's like, oh yeah, I remember those. There are a lot of folks that want to see this happen. And what, when this has been tested before, it's saved between 20 and 50% over the existing system that we have, which is the monopoly of CPT codes. Look at that. Look who's also included in here. Many more options for doctors of chiropractic. Many more options for OMDs, massage therapists, naturopaths, even some non-licensed practitioner types, depending on the state, if they're allowed to do their thing. Maybe Minnesota, where Diane Miller was instrumental years ago when Governor Jesse Ventura was there, signed the first safe harbor provision for any state. Now a number of other states have followed through. We'll catch up with Diane Miller on that as well. Nurse practitioner, you see all of that that's available? Now it could be done. It doesn't take 10 years of study to figure it out. It could be done today. So I urge you all, abccodes.com, share it with your provider, your practitioner, your representative in government. Send letters to the Maha movement about it. Let's get this thing done. In the meantime, we'll be better. We'll be healthier along the way. Now, with that, I'm going to take a quick pause here. We'll get the Maha Minute update for the moment. And then I'm going to head on over to the podcast set. And Diane Miller joins us by phone, health freedom hero and birthday girl. Happy birthday, Diane. I'll be right back.
From Hollywood to America's farms to the halls of the FDA, Maha had a big week. Let's get into it. Maha went full Hollywood this week. Actor Dennis Quaid just joined the fight for answers on Lyme disease. The actor teamed up with Secretary Kennedy as HHS announced a new push for earlier diagnoses, better treatment, and more research into Lyme. Meanwhile, the COVID accountability files aren't closed just yet. David Morans, a former senior advisor to Dr. Fauci, pleaded guilty this week to conspiring to evade federal record laws and conceal government documents. He now faces up to 5 years in prison. More accountability for Americans is on the way. And the Maha movement just got a major ally at the FDA. President Trump nominated Dr. Heidi Overton to become the agency's next commissioner. Secretary Kennedy telling President Trump, Heidi is always right. And that does it for this week's Maha Minute. I'm Caitlin Sinclair. I'll see you next time.
Yeah, I don't know about Heidi at FDA. I mean, there's still the jury's still out on that one. But if you're a fan of health, freedom, and healing liberty, you're in the right place. This is the Robert Scott Bell Show. Let's see if we can get Diane Miller in the mix here. Diane's joining us by phone on her birthday. Diane, are you there?
Hey, yes, I am. Hi, Robert. Good to be here with you.
Oh my gosh. Happy birthday, my love. You are so special to me. And I wish everybody knew how special you are, and maybe more people than ever do, because of your work with Health Freedom for decades and decades now. You introduced me to many of the people in the Health Freedom movement, as well as I continue to grow with this show. But we've been pals for so many years, and I'm so grateful to celebrate with you on your birthday.
Oh, I'm just delighted. It's a great way to celebrate, except it does, you know, bring up the issue of aging, and that's a whole nother story.
Yes, I know. You know, the thing is, as I've learned, you know, homeopathy, that was my big starting point, honestly, in my opening to this entire health freedom movement, recognizing that, you know, it had been hidden from me as a standard American kid growing up in the medical, you know, in a medical reality, if you will, that opened me up to do things that, you know, now me at 60, I'm looking at myself and saying, I couldn't do this at 24 when I started. So I don't know that we have to accept aging in the same way I perceived it when I was young. But yes, there's still elements of that. Bruce Lipton, who I had on, we replayed his interview. He says, we should be living to 150. I'm like, I'm not sure I figured that one out yet, but as long as I'm active, I'm going to keep having fun.
I'm trying for 140.
All right. Well, that's a worthwhile goal. And you have also integrated homeopathy. Let's go back be a little personal here. I know your sister's a homeopath, but when was it that you learned of these things called natural medicine, things outside of the Flexner Report Medical School official medicine?
I was in probably early 1980s when I first started. I had a chronic strep throat, and, you know, somebody told me about it. And so I went and I took a remedy and I got a strep throat, and I thought, that's weird. I got a strep throat. And so I went to the doctor, took an antibiotic, and then the homeopath says, no, that was kind of a aggravation. So then cleared my antibiotic and went back and took the remedy again and never had a strep throat again in my whole life.
Were you already a young attorney at that point, or this is before you went into law?
That's before I went into law. I went to law school when I was 40.
That's right. You are a late bloomer.
Yeah, I was a medical technologist, chemistry degree, immunology, hematology, that kind of stuff for years. Then I had my children and went into law after that.
My goodness. So you were able to raise them with a little bit of homeopathy then.
Yeah, yeah. So right away, then I went into helping my children. And it was interesting. You know how homeopathy is, where it looks for the pattern of a person. And I took my child in because it was so successful for me. I took my little girl in and the homeopath says, does she like her feet covered at night? And I go, nope, she actually doesn't. And I cut all the bottoms off of her little feety pajamas in Minnesota. And so, how about butter? Does she like butter? How about, does she like fish? And it's like, all these questions seemed really weird. But my daughter had a bloody nose, a chronic bloody nose during the night. And so I was wondering why they were asking me all these weird questions. And then they said what the remedy was. And then I said, why were you asking me those questions? And he just showed me the book, and it was the pattern of the remedy.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, your feet covered, that you don't like hot feet, you know, whatever. Anyway, so I was going, that is very strange. But she had one bloody nose and never had another one. So that's kind of how I started. I wanted to use it on myself first before I attempted to give my children anything. Mm-hmm. And that's very successful. And so then they were like 2 or 3 years old. Now they're in their late 40s and they use homeopathy as well.
Wow. Johanna's not in her late, did you say 40s?
Yeah.
No, that's not possible.
The magic 77 number. Joe's going to turn 50 next year.
Oh my God. It's like, she's just a kid. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
Just a little kid.
Right.
49.
That is amazing. Well,
yeah. So I have a comment on the ABC coding, just in terms of aging. It's like, 20 years ago, when I told people that AMA owned the copyrights for the CPT coding and that they made money off of them, and that's why they were exclusive, I was considered a total nutcase, you know, like a conspiracy theory person. And right now, the proposed rule for the regulation of CPT codings is up. They do this annually, and it says right in the rule, the current procedural terminology, CPT coding systems, is owned and copyrighted by the AMA, and CMS uses CPT used under a royalty-free licensing agreement with the AMA. So it's like all of this, all of the things that are coming forward with the breaking through these lies that have been told, or these suppressions of information that have been part of our world for so many years, are coming forward. And it's just, it was so exciting for me to see the proposed rule. And I've been writing comments to this proposed rule. It's like 700 pages long. I'm trying to get my arms around all the CPT coding stuff right now, but we're submitting formal comments from the National Health Freedom Action in order to say, hey, this is not okay. Even in the proposed rule, they mention conflict of interest. Why is a private entity that gets more money because of this being regulating the money coding system? And so all of this is in the proposed rule, and it's so wonderful to see it in writing, and I'm so proud of the agency for doing this right now. So that I wanted to just get that in there. Thanks for bringing it up. And the deadline, I think, is September 15th for formal comments. We don't have ours finished, but they will be on our website as soon as we get them done.
Yeah, you have been right for so long, and yet they called you wrong or a conspiracy theorist. Like, we've all been the recipient of those slanders and things that would kind of make us toxic to certain people, right? Oh, no, they called her that name, so we can't have anything to do with her. Rather than addressing the maybe I use a legal term, veracity of the claims, right? And here they are right now. Are you under the impression that this would have happened with any other administration? Because as much as we can criticize Trump on things and Kennedy on things, the fact is that some of these things are happening are like, I don't think I would have seen it in our lifetime, considering what we know of the past.
Right. I think that's what brings me so much joy. There's always a silver lining for everything that happens in the universe. And the the way that the truth navigates through populations or systems or cultures is very fascinating to me. And we're all part of that truth, that voice of truth. But when you have dominant structures, you've got to break them somehow. They have to come apart in order to move. And that happens slowly. And when you see a great big burst come forward, it's like, oh, thank God. You know, and this is one of those really big bursts of truth. And I'm grateful for this administration for allowing this to happen. Even if they try to stuff it back in the wastebasket again, you know, in the future, it's here now. We can deal with it. We can make change happen based on it and quickly as much as we can right now.
So when I went back, I mentioned in the monologue about Minnesota being the first state to create, you know, allow, let's say, non-licensed, non-medical practitioners to hang a shingle as healthcare providers of some kind. I'm not exaggerating that. That was, you took a significant part in lobbying those efforts at the time when Jesse Ventura was governor of Minnesota. A lot of people don't know that history, and now it's expanded to, you'll tell us how many states have various forms of safe harbor provisions for non-licensed, non-medical practitioners. Also, I think another issue is the ability to even say no, to refuse vaccines or genetic experiments called mRNA shots, et cetera. Give us an update from that journey for those that are new to you, Diane, on your 77th birthday.
Cool. Well, both of those are two projects that our organization is always continuing to be involved with. So the project of making sure that you can have the practitioner that you want. When we went forward in Minnesota to allow people that were not licensed medical doctors to hang out a shingle for being a healer, you know, we were considered totally wacko. And so we drafted legislation to put an exemption in for the criminal charges against practicing medicine without a license. And I represented a farmer who was criminally charged for practicing medicine without a license for curing Congressman Bedell, basically, of Lyme disease and cancer with the colostrum from his dairy farm. So I there those two hung juries and they withdrew all the charges. I knew they could put him in jail again. So I went to the Capitol with a whole group of activists from Minnesota, and we drafted the bill saying, if you are practicing healing and you don't have a medical license, you are exempt from the criminal charges as long as you tell people what you do, what your training is, if you have any, and give out a disclosure and avoid a list of prohibited acts, like you can't puncture the skin, give out controlled drugs or legend drugs or prescription drugs.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So that was a very big push at the legislature because it was so unusual. And we were considered snake oil salesmen and quacks and all this stuff. But we had incredible legislators that were with us. They were champions of freedom. And we put it through the House and the Senate. And the House was a Republican. The Senate was a Democrat, and Jesse Ventura signed it. So then after that, all the other states wanted the same thing. So then we got a call from so many people that we started a national organization to actually help do that thing.
What, remind me, what year was that legislation signed? Did Governor Ventura sign it into law?
99.
That was 99, yeah. It was an interesting year, 99. That's when I started my radio show in Atlanta. And, you know, I learned about a lot of things in the previous years. That whole decade, in fact, was one of great growth and learning for me that would lead me to do that, which I'm still doing to this day, in addition to being, you know, promoting all forms of natural medicine and even integrative medicine and even allopathic medicine. I believe there's a place for everything. I just don't believe anything should have a monopoly, including homeopathy.
Right. We had a lot of contact with medical doctors and dentists that were getting shut down. So we drafted a model legislation for expanded care so that the doctors would not lose their license or practicing outside of their standard of care. And a lot of states were going forward at the time to try and pass that legislation. And 25 states or 28 states passed legislation to allow the medical doctors to practice holistic medicine. But at the bottom of the statute, whenever they drafted it, they would put, as long as they stay within the standard of care. So they were going to the legislature and passing legislation, but it wasn't effective and they'd always get shut down for standard of care. So we wrote a model legislation, which we still have available for states that want to do that, so that they can protect our holistic allopathic.
Well, if they go to nationalhealthfreedom.org, I think they'll be able to plug in, right?
Right. Yep.
Yeah. You guys can support the organization. You become members of the organization. But Diane, you and your team have been working tirelessly for decades now on this. And I know there are a lot of, dare I say it, Johnny come latelys. I don't mean that negatively, honestly, because COVID opened up a whole new world of things that we would have never seen if it weren't for the response to COVID. As much as I've said this many times, and some people get mad at me, much as I was not a fan and still not a fan of this thing called warp speed to bring these things out, the fact of the matter is there's nothing wasted. And if that hadn't happened, we probably wouldn't be as open as a people to all the things we're talking about now that used to be kind of relegated to, as you know, conspiracy theory talk. And in any way they could dismiss it, they have a hard time dismissing the things we're saying because we've got the receipts now.
Right, exactly. That's exactly right. And the for the safe harbor bills, which are for like the homeopaths that you're going to have on your call today, or the herbalist or the Qigong practitioners, everything, there are now 11 states that have some form of safe harbor. Some of them are pretty narrow, just a few practitioners. Some are very broad, like Minnesota. But we also are staff goes to states that want to pass a bill, and we try to train them in how to lobby. We try to draft bills for them. And right now we're tracking Oklahoma, New Hampshire, Florida, Connecticut, Texas, Wyoming, Utah, Ohio, and Maryland on our staff just to help any contact there of moving a bill forward. So that's basically what we do with our safe harbor. But for the COVID stuff, we started a project with some leaders in California and Vermont called the Right to Refuse Project. And when we launched the Right to Refuse Project, we were drafting bills to protect body autonomy so that mandates could not be put on a person's body. And that was so controversial that when we sent those out, we lost a lot of subscribers, but we gained more subscribers than we lost. So the whole shift in the awareness of freedom shifted for COVID. And I totally agree with you. It has opened up things that we were sitting on for years. And so like CPT coding, it's just a great thing to see something come to light that might never have come to light without COVID. And the suffering of COVID was terrible. But it has changed the landscape of health freedom movement.
Yes. Now, we talked 1999 Minnesota, the safe harbor provision there that was signed into law, and now 11 states in addition, or 10 states in addition, but 11 states total. Tell me about the disastrous consequences of freeing up all healers to hang a shingle in various ways in states. Has it been a disaster? Have people been dying in Minnesota of homeopathy and naturopathy and herbalism? Tell me what's happened since then.
We don't keep track of all the fatalities, you know. but I must say that we love our environment and we don't have any We don't have any data on death. We have a lot of data on allopathic issued deaths.
Mm-hmm.
But we have great, loving, and booming environment. And for example, when you're a consumer in Minnesota, you can go on the web or you can go in the Yellow Pages or whatever, and you can find whatever kind of practitioner you want. And I always think it really, the people are what reflects whether things are going well. And here, a lot of people, I mean, if you ask a person on the street, hey, how are you doing? Oh, yeah, I went to my homeopath. I went to my massage therapist. It's really been helping. And that is that's the reality in our culture right now in Minnesota. And I think that is not true in a lot of states. So we, the consumers of Minnesota, are enjoying a very broad array of issues. I mean, just recently I told a friend, hey, did you ever try light therapy, the red light therapy with the firefly? And they said, no, I got to try that. And so they, you know, there just happened to be a practitioner in their town and they could practice legally in Minnesota. So they went and they had really good results. And you just think about that would have never happened. I mean, I was representing people 20 years ago that were, you know, being charged with very small things like electrodermal screening or, you know, biofeedback for practicing medicine without a license. So now the consumer's the one that dictates where they want to go. And that's really my passion, is really resonates with yours, is, hey, I'm the person that has the health issue. I want to go where I feel good about going. And I trust someone and I can ask them and they tell me. And then there's always fraud if you have an issue of fraud. But we have a lot of loving relationships with wonderful healers in Minnesota.
Nice. Now, if you speak of data, if there were data to support what I kind of hinted at in a tongue-in-cheek way about deaths due to natural practitioners, that would have been highlighted the moment they had that data to say how dangerous, how horrible it is. We need to stop this movement cold right now. But they don't lead with data. They've only led with propaganda, fear campaigns, smear campaigns, trying to, you know, again, imprison even the medical doctors who are licensed, to restrict them to do, you know, a narrow thing, as opposed to they want to all, many of them that I meet, explode out into what we call integrative and complementary care, some level of an allowance for the freedom to innovate, which doesn't exist in a restrictive monopoly medicine license environment. So the 11 states, to varying degrees, have opened up some semblance of competition. It isn't that the homeopaths there are saying, I'm a medical doctor. They might be, because some of the, at least one of the folks joining us next hour who's a homeopath is also a medical doctor. And I support that. I want everybody to be able to do it, not just one or none. So the idea here is we support what? Foundational freedoms to choose. And that is not just the choice for me as someone who might seek out one of these homeopaths, or you, Diane, but also to be that practitioner or provider, not to be able to lie and deceive about what they are or what they know. Just tell me what is your training? What is your education? I get to decide if that's legit or not. I don't want anybody else in the government telling me. That's just, again, I know that's foreign to a lot of Americans. We've fallen far short of our founders' desire for us to stay vigilant and diligent, recognizing that government would be captured by entities, agencies, industries that would use it to curry special favor to get them exalted status above all others. That's not an egalitarian system. That's, you know, hearkening back to the kings, queens, and emperors of old, who would declare their friends to be, you know, of special benefit, that they could do anything they want and have no harm come to them. All right. That was like the idea of absolving you of any liability for wrongdoing. The king could do that. We shouldn't have a government that does that, but we've seen that, like, for instance, in 1986, with the act that set the vaccine manufacturers up for no liability should their products injure or kill.
Right. And like for the Saunders case, the colostrum case that I was on, they had to advertise for people that were hurt by the farmer and they couldn't find anybody. So they really based their case on snake oil sales and stuff like that. There was no data of harm in that case. They just based it on, were you practicing the healing arts? And that was a crime. So the definition of practice of medicine was anything you do to heal another person, you get put in jail if you're not a medical doctor. there was no data about anybody getting harmed. So we were up against a really bad law. So what happened was we got hung juries because the jury said, nobody got hurt. Why are you putting this person in jail? And so one lady on the jury was like, I'm a school teacher. What if I put a bandage on somebody's knee out in the playground? Am I going to go to jail? So we got hung juries because the law was so crazy, monopolistic. So that data, looking for data, I mean, you're talking about looking for data. Do they ever ask how many, you know, vaccines a child has when you have a crib death or a, you know, a sudden death of any kind? Do they ask, was it the vaccine? No, they're not collecting that data in the autopsies. And states are going forward trying to get the coroners to have to ask that question just so they can get data on allopathic procedures.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, we have, so much history that I don't want forgotten, you know, and this is part of what you've done. And you had introduced me to many people over the years that had been at it in the 20th century, way before I was even born, that this health freedom movement, or even what's called the Maha movement, is not something that's new. It's something that has been built upon, but oftentimes because of the COVID sudden crisis, people came into it and still don't know anything about that history. If they go to nationalhealthfreedom.org, I'm sure there's reference points to some of those people that have come before us. And I know with the organization that you have founded as well, we would once in a while have, I would call them annual, but they weren't every year, where we would have a coalitions of people from various organizations come together and discuss health freedom and put together proposals, things like that. And in many cases, it allowed for some of the newcomers to meet some of those who had been here and some who are no longer with us like that. And I think it's important to know the history that none of us, at least I didn't grow up knowing anything about.
Right. Well, we started the United States Health Freedom Congress foundational work in 2003. We had our first meeting in a convent up in Rochester, Minnesota. And we had groups coming from all over the country to talk about health freedom. And when we started our national organization, we just didn't want it to be alternative health. Mm-hmm. We wanted it to be a and freedom. And so that those biannual or whatever, whenever we had the energy, we would put together a gathering. And those have been very, for me, they have been very, very momentous in my life, because watching these incredible leaders come forward out of the woodwork and just doing fantastic things across the country for the last 30 years, it's just been wonderful. The last one we had was 2022. And I've had some health issues, so I'm on a new health plan now. I'm doing really good.
Yay.
But, that's the fun of watching you and these wonderful leaders like yourself come forward and walk that path. And, you know, when COVID happened, we said, well, they finally did it, you know, and people are going, what are you talking about? You know, because we could see it coming, obviously. And there's a lot of history, a lot of celebrating right now, but we still have a lot of work to do.
Oh, yeah.
For the regular people persons who are not familiar with the issues between health and freedom and the legal issues that have transpired over the years to get a dominant culture in place. There's a lot of education to be done and a lot of fear. And I think people have been trained to trust the doctors or the science instead of their own body and their own spiritual path. And I think that the opening up of all kinds of other practitioners, like when they did the pilot project for ABC coding 15 years ago, they realized they went to these alternative practitioners. They did much better. Their outcomes were much better. They were taking charge of their life. They were spending less money. And it's like teaching people to trust their own health journey so that they just only think of it as a science. Somebody else is going to decide what they need.
Yeah.
They don't realize that they know more about themselves than their doctor does.
Well, and also the system we grew up with, most of us in America, was, you know, primarily profit driven. And again, in a free market, if there was one truly, or a true capitalism, there's nothing wrong with trying to earn a living and do better economically. But when that becomes the bottom line, then what happens to that sacred relationship? And I think that's been corrupted for a long time now. And so we don't see the how it's even done, or how it was done, so to speak, as far as real healthcare delivery, right? When you talk about, books have been written about 2-minute medicine, 3-minute medicine, 5-minute medicine, where the doctors are only paid so much through those CPT codes. They're looking at their clock going, after this 10-minute thing, I'm done. I'm not getting paid anymore. So they have to move on to the next patient. In the meantime, what is their role? To find the drug that matches the symptom to suppress it, as opposed to matching the patient's totality of symptoms that might indicate a particular remedy, like we do in homeopathy, that is could take hours to determine, if not beyond the meeting, hours of research beyond that. Our system is not set up for it. That's why we're going to do this in the second hour and show people what's involved in what I would call real healthcare.
Yeah, I'm really excited that you're bringing that on your second hour, because, I've been working on reviewing the bill for homeopathic remedies federally. And, you know, one of my biggest points of education for homeopathic consumers is that homeopathy doesn't treat a particular symptom, but it looks for an energetic pattern that matches another substance and then the dilution process of energy. So it's like the intake for a homeopathic solution is so different than an allopathic intake. And a lot of people don't understand that because they're so used to the cause and effect of allopathy.
Yeah, it's quite extraordinary. That's why it'll be a little bit shocking for some in the audience. Although this audience is more open than most, I agree. But if you're tuning in for the first time, get ready. Hour two is going to blow your mind. As I got a team of 6 homeopaths from Global Natural Healing Solutions with me. And they've taken a case that you submitted, one of you submitted, and the Mr. E, we call him, is the case we're going to be reviewing. And we'll do a follow-up next week as well, because we'll be challenged to cover it all in one session. But I'm so excited to be able to bring this, because it was so foreign to me for much of my young life.
That is so great. I'm so glad you're doing this. Good.
One of the other things we've been doing for the last couple of years now, I think, Diane, something I was reluctant to do even as a homeopath, what kind of weird homeopath am I, was to do a homeopathic remedy every day, a hit, we call it, the homeopathic hits every day. And it isn't to turn everybody in the audience into homeopaths. It was just to introduce them to, you know, what it looks like, what kind of things are written. It's oftentimes archaic in terms of language that goes back 100 years or more, but that we can navigate it. And it isn't to be, well, the best of my ability to demystify at least some of it. And so if you want to stick around, we can do a homeopathic hit together real quick.
That'd be fun.
Yeah,
that
okay.
That would be really fun.
Well, this special homeopathic hit dedicated to Diane Miller, health freedom hero here from nationalhealthfreedom.org. And it's known as the moon seed, but we'll get into the Latin name in just a moment. Super Don, hit it.
Playing all of the homeopathic hits every day, right here on the Robert Scott Bell Show.
All right, today's homeopathic hit brought to you by our friends at Better Way Health, betterwayhealth.com. It's Menispermium canadense, and it is a plant-based remedy. It's known as the moon seed. We're going to go into it in a moment, but Better Way Health modulates the immune system, has a safety profile more like a homeopathic medicine, even though it's a material substance in terms of beta-glucan. But they've done incredible work in validating the science and promoting freedom of speech to know about the science behind it, what it does to modulate your immune system. Great team of people are waiting for you. You can scan the QR code right there. Use discount code RSB to get 10% off at checkout, betterwayhealth.com. We also have a little bit of sweetness in life is a good thing. But we can do that without harm. And now we can do that without harm, and it's delicious too. Dulsa Life, dulsalife.com. And it's a botanical blend, and it actually feeds your good probiotic colonies, prebiotic, probiotic, postbiotics. It is a wonderful, sweet option that you have that's non-synthetic, not artificial, and doesn't impact glycemic the way that the sugar, refined sugars do. And it is just so nice. And we're going to be hanging out together in the next couple of weeks, one at the American Naturopathic Medical Association and then at the IAOMT in Columbus, Ohio coming up. Use discount code RSB at dulsalife.com. We also have Ridgecrest Herbals. eclectic herbalism. That was a mainstay of medicine in America back in the days of early naturopathy, homeopathy, all of that. And rcherbals.com is a place where you can plug into those eclectic formulations. They have wonderful liver remedies, kidney remedies. They're most famous for their Clear Lungs product that has been, oh my gosh, people in this audience say, I can't get by without it. It's amazing. Good herbal formula, RSB 25 off for 25% off. That's a discount that's unprecedented. Go to rcherbals.com and check it out and get them there. Also, Lisa Rooney is additional homeopathic support that we love every month. She joins us for an extended homeopathic hit. And we had a wonderful session earlier this week about why a homeopathic remedy might not work. That was so cool. And she often joins us at our monthly AMA meetings as well. Ask Me Anything, not American Medical Association. So you can find her at VibrantLife247.com. Get a discount, $100 off by mentioning the RSB show. Also, we're going to hear from GNHS Healing big time in hour two. We got the whole team joining us pretty much. And you can use a discount code when you plug into their services. They are going to cover you. They are so dedicated, and they'll connect you to the right homeopath for you. You're going to learn about them in real time next hour. And that's at GNHSHealing.com, RSB240. And that's the discount code. I'm so blessed that we have more homeopaths coming online. Homeopathy is on the comeback trail. So let's look at this remedy. We open it up. It's a free downloadable PDF based primarily on the Borky. I had to choose one. There's many Materias Medica. The Borky is one I've used more frequently, but it is known as Moonseed, indicated often restlessness, sick headache, spinal pain remedy, et cetera. As we scroll down, we see key characteristics. Words like megrim, who says that anymore? Again, you'd have to now define these words, but you'll see whether it's low spirits, but a sick headache comes in, pressure in the head, sick headache pattern keeps coming up, pain down the back, spinal pain, right? Big part of this remedy picture, but also a dry mouth and throat. You could have a different scenario where you have spinal pain, but no dry mouth or throat issues. May not be the right remedy. Tongue and saliva, swollen tongue, a lot of saliva, dryness and itching all over the body. Restlessness and dreams might be related in this. A bruised leg sensation. Extremity pains may also occur. So when we look at the Borky, it indicates a very low potency. It indicates third potency. So if you want to use it self-help, and this is fine when you're too in self-help and experimenting with yourself, 3X, 3C, 6X, 6C, 12X, anything like this, you know, you might find these things in health food stores or natural pharmacies, but it's different than going to a homeopath. That's why I say if you want to go to higher potencies and really want to get support, reach out to your friends at GNHS.com or VibrantLife247.com. And finally, we scroll down and we look at some other adjunct remedies because one might lead to another, which might lead to another. And this is where you might feel like you're over your head. And that's why, again, seek out a homeopath that's learned and skilled that can work with you. But I am all for freedom. And if you're going to do self-help, just stick with the lower potencies. Cocculus is indicated here. Bryonia, one of my favorite. Liver polycrest, lots of headache indications as well. Gelsemium can be restlessness as well. Nux vomica, classic liver polycrest that does a lot and can be related to headaches. Sanguinaria, natural muriaticum, and Rustox when you have a lot of skeletal pain and extensive pain. So I bring you now to our friend, Diane Miller, birthday girl, because she's had a lot of experience with homeopathy. And as I said, I'm not trying to turn the audience into homeopaths, but I want them to have access and demystify to the best of my ability these remedies so that they might reach for that before they reach for a toxic medicament that could destroy their liver, not heal their liver along the way of suppressing their symptoms.
So So I have a question for you.
Yes.
So when you go to, this is an issue that I have with the federal legislation, which I think it's better to have a homeopathic remedy without any indication for use on it, because mm-hmm. when you find a remedy in the store, it'll just have one of those things.
Yeah.
Like one of the things, the whole list you have there, you just have one of those things on the tube.
Right.
And so the person thinks, oh, I'll use this allopathically for that thing. So it's teaching people to use homeopathic remedies allopathically, which is not a way to use them because they're more like a pattern of a total pattern. And so I'd like people to be encouraged to go to their homeopaths so that they could see if that remedy is good. So when you're experimenting with yourself, yes, I agree. You know, an outstanding symptom with the label on the tube might be okay, but it's best to look at that PDF first before mm-hmm. you go to this, get all the tubes with one little sentence on it.
That's a great point, Diane, because, you know, it's all almost a little misleading, because when I'll talk to somebody about like a little common ailment that I can, you know, say, and I'll call them out and I say, you know, here's one that you might look into, and they'll read the label on it and they'll say, but it doesn't say that on it. I'm like, well, yeah, how much, if they fit it all on, you wouldn't be able to read it. You need an electron microscope, you know? So that's the point of also giving an option out there besides allopathic drugs for suppression. I'm in favor, obviously, as you are, to have it on the market and the marketplace, but it's a, you know, it's a delicate balance, right? How do we find a way to get these out that cannot hurt you? But we have a regulatory environment that wants to protect us from ourselves, which I don't feel like I need protection for myself.
Right. I don't think it should, there should be a label thing saying, we recommend you see your homeopath.
Yeah. Why not? And then we'd have more, you know, homeopaths.
Well, online is like, yeah, because but it's interesting when people get used to a remedy, say they go to a homeopath and the homeopath says, this is the remedy that works for, you know, this part of your body. Mm-hmm. Okay. So a remedy that I go to when I feel like I'm going to throw up, you know, or I'm indigestion. That sure. works for me. But, you know, another family member, when they had that feeling, they use a different remedy.
Exactly.
And so,
yeah, that's what we covered on Wednesday with Lisa Rooney, which was so great. But it is so foreign to our way of thinking when we're raised allopathically. Diane, God bless you. I love you dearly. You know that. And you're always family to me. And I'm so grateful we got to share your birthday celebration. And I hope you have a wonderful organic birthday cake later.
Thank you. I will. All right. Love you.
Love you
so much, Rob.
Diane Miller, nationalhealthfreedom.org, warming us up for the extraordinary, never been done before on the Robert Scott Bell Show or many broadcast media outlets. That is, we're going to take a case, 6 homeopaths from the Global Natural Health Solutions, GNHSHealing.com. And we're going to take a case that you submitted. And this is, we've never done this before. Roll with it. You're going to be allowed inside to see the process as it unfolds. And if you have questions or comments, we may or may not get to them today, but we are going to do a follow-up next week just to let you know. So stand by for that and a whole lot more. The place for health, freedom, and healing liberty is right here on the Robert Scott Bell Show, 7 days a week. God bless you. We'll be right back. The power to heal is yours.
Taking on bureaucrats and corporations that would stand in the way of health freedom. Here's Robert.
It's here. I can hardly stand it. I'm so excited. We got a group of 6 homeopaths together, and we've been talking about this for months, I think. It feels like years because I've been anticipating it for so long, to actually let you into what it's like to take a case in homeopathy. And we're going to learn a little bit about, you know, the kind of homeopathy that's being conducted by the GNHS team as well. And they really are dedicated. I've had some time to have some interactions outside of the show. We featured many of them on this show. And you've seen how committed they are to do the right thing, to find the right remedy for the individual coming to see them for their help. So this is an unprecedented episode of the Robert Scott Bell Show. We've never done this fully on the air, right? Where we get a lot of homeopaths together. This is what the GNHS team does, by the way. When you say, hey, I need some help, they'll find the right doctor for you. And then they're going to actually take the time outside of that to consult with one another to give you the best opportunity to achieve the recovery you're after. And I love the collegiality. I love the cooperation. This is like a Bruce Lipton thing, cooperation instead of competition, where we work together for the betterment of everybody that's involved, or particularly the individual. So in this session, just remember, this is purely educational. This is not, you know, to quote unquote diagnose a disease. That's not what we do in homeopathy. We take the totality of the symptom picture. That's not just physical or physiological alone. And we're going to look at the case that was selected through a homeopathic lens. Obviously, that's our bias here, and that's what we want to share with you. So we're not going to diagnose, we're not going to even recommend a particular treatment in this particular session, but given an opportunity to peer into something that we never get to see, please observe, be observant, listen, And you'll be able to replay this as well. And we're going to have a follow-up, kind of a debriefing session next week. We'll be able to follow up, and then you'll be able to submit questions about what you've witnessed today. So we're going to do that in just a moment. But first, quick hit from the GNHS team video so I can get on over to the podcast set. And then we'll welcome Kim Aaliyah to further set the stage of what we're going to do here to let you know how you can peer in and what we're going to be witnessing today. All right. Thank you for being here, everybody. Share this show. And I'll be right back with Kim Aaliyah and then the rest of the GNHS team. Check it out.
I am the first point of contact for all prospective clients, but also following them through at every single phase of their wellness journey. Oftentimes, people are at the phase where they've tried everything, they've done everything in their awareness, and then they discover homeopathy. It's my honor to try and address their questions as they come up.
All right, here we are. We're getting ready. I wish Kim Aaliyah were sitting next to me and the whole team, in fact. That would be great. But let's see if we can bring Kim into the discussion. And we'll, hey, Kim, how are you, buddy?
Robert, how are you, my friend? Good to see you.
I'm so excited. I might need a remedy to calm me down.
We'll give you some Justinian, maybe some aconite combination of different.
Exactly. And we can, that's why I was talking about a little bit of that differentiation of even with Diane Miller last hour, how we can have these remedies available for self-help on a basis of, you know, little things here and there, but also the encouragement that we want to be able to go further and show people what it's like, because it's been foreign to many of our fellow Americans in this lifetime. And we're starting to reemerge. I feel like homeopathy is on the comeback trail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree. You know, I think it's important, Robert, to define what homeopathy is, because when we made our film introducing homeopathy and we went out to the streets of Philadelphia and asked people, mostly people didn't really know what it was. They thought it was herbology or natural, but they didn't really know. So let me put forward my definition of homeopathy. So I think the definition that's most, that I find most useful, is that homeopathy is the therapeutic or prophylactic application of the law of similars as was codified by Samuel Hahnemann and further developed by his followers. And I think that definition is a clear one. You know, it defines it very accurately, and it allows us to really understand the principles that Hahnemann was trying to employ. You know, many people believe that homeopathy is diluted medicines, potentized medicines, and that's actually not the case. Hahnemann in his early years actually used crude medicines. He did all of his provings up until about 1828 with crude, the plants with crude materials and the metals in a 1X trituration. So, you know, you can give herbs, you can give allopathic medicines, and you can prescribe them homeopathically, provided you're using the law of similars. Mm-hmm. And in terms of the type of homeopathy that we utilize at Global Natural Health Solutions, we feel it's very important to have a good foundation in the principles of Hahnemannian classical homeopathy. And we do encourage our practitioners to develop, to, you know, further explore other possibilities. But I think it's very important for them to have that very strong grounding and foundation. And a good example of that is in 1848, there was a homeopathic institution that was established here in North America. It was called the Homeopathic Medical College of Pennsylvania, and was established by Constantine Haring, Jacob Jeans, and Walter Williamson. And it was a fairly eclectic institution. They taught many different approaches to homeopathy. And there was a particular practitioner there by the name of Adolf Lippe. Lippe is considered by many people to have been the greatest homeopathic prescriber who ever lived. He was called the Ajax of homeopathy, like that Greek general. He would drive into battle and defeat all of his foes. And in 50 years of busy practice, he never lost one typhoid, cholera, or malaria patient. 50 years, I mean, this is during a period of time when the mortality rate of these diseases was 40, 50, 60%. He never lost a case. And he read the Organon, which is Hahnemann's seminal writing on how to practice homeopathy, twice a year for 50 years. And after 50 years, he said, I'm just beginning now to fully understand the Organon. And this gives you a sense of the depth of genius contained in that work and why it's so important to have that basic foundation, that fundamental understanding as Hahnemann laid it down, and to use that as your foundation so you have those principles and then further develop from there. So that's what we really encourage with our practitioners. Most of them are very well, actually, they're all extremely well-trained. They've studied all over the world. They're physicians, they're medical doctors, they're naturopathic doctors, and we feel we're providing a very high quality of care. And as you mentioned, the other thing that we do is if a particular provider is having challenges with an individual case, which can always happen, we work collaboratively, we work together, we work to find the solution, the best remedy to help that individual.
Yeah. Well, we need a remedy today when it sounds like you're talking underwater. I don't know if we have selected the right microphone, but hopefully everybody.
I'm so sorry. You know, that's because the microphone I had was not working correctly. And
no, so we'll maneuver it.
Yeah, I just want to say, you know, that school, the Homeopathic Medical College of Pennsylvania, when Lippe took it over in 1864, he established an educational program that was adhering very strictly to those Hahnemannian principles. And the graduates from that school between 1864 and 1869 were some of the most accomplished, well-trained, most consistently successful practitioners in the history of homeopathy. So we actually have evidence of why it's important to have that foundation to really be able to practice homeopathy successfully and effectively.
But we also recognize that most Americans don't know a thing about what you just said.
Yeah, it's true.
And you know, in that regard, we're kind of really, as I say, on the comeback trail, but I recognize we are so small in terms of the presence relative to what allopathic medicine has done. And for me, and it's for all of your team, we don't denigrate allopathic medicine's existence. That's not the point of this. We want to see everybody working together collegially and cooperatively. We're all better when that happens. But even among homeopaths, I want to see that too. We've been picked off one by one over many generations. And now to see you guys as a team coming together is inspiring to me. And that's why I'm so excited to bring that to my audience and more.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. We're really happy to show what the type of work that we can do and how we can really help people to feel totally alive in this world. You know, not just get by, but actually feel like when you wake up in the morning, you're happy to embrace the world. That's what homeopathy can offer.
Well, and also, you know, some of the feedback I've gotten from those that have gotten consults through your team, it's like, this is the first time I feel like I've been actually heard and listened to. Right? It's like, what a foreign concept. You'd think that's what doctors are supposed to do, but that art of healing has been lost to this, dare I say, dysfunctional medicine, where it's all about how fast can I get you in, get you out, get you on the remedy, if you will, in a pharmaceutical sense. And so what your team is providing is a dedication, like going back in time, but in a very profound positive time when, like you pointed out, in the 1860s, people were getting 100% success, if you will, 0% deaths when everybody else was at 50%.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're right too, because, you know, you don't become a homeopath to make a fortune. You become a homeopath because you're dedicated to helping others. You know, Robert, I had a sebaceous cyst. I went to the hospital. The attending physician spent 5 minutes with me and sent me a bill for $3,600. 5 minutes, $3,600. That tells you there's something wrong with the conventional medical system.
Very much so.
You know, really.
So GNHSHealing.com, they're present here every day, even when we're not doing a big event like this. And we're going to bring some of the team in one by one, perhaps all of them eventually, as Kim has set the stage. And by the way, remind everybody about the film on homeopathy that you put out.
Yes, yeah, so we made a film entitled Introducing Homeopathy. You can go to our website, which is introducinghomeopathy.com. You can see the trailer, clips from the film, and you can purchase it for, I think, $14, $15, and you can rent it for $4, $5.
Great. Wonderful. Well, we have Annalisa with us, and she's been on the show before. Annalisa, she's going to come on now and introduce our mystery, let's say, client, patient. I don't have a word referring to Mr. E, as she's going to introduce, and how this was selected. And I want to thank everybody for submitting cases. And we can only choose one. This is a big deal. But you have an opportunity to reach out and get a great, great discount as well if you want to go further and get a consult. Do we have Annalisa available to join us now? Annalisa Percy? I don't see your picture, but I hear you.
Well, I see my picture.
Well, if you can remain visually anonymous to me anyway, but it's okay. I can hear you perfectly if you want to introduce the overview, so to speak. Each patient has certain things that jump out more than others that kind of lead the charge, at least initially.
Okay. So today, case of a man between the ages of 65 and 75. His main concern that he brings for our consideration is stomach pain. He has suffered this since 1978. Stress would seem to be the causation. Initially, he described the pain thusly. He wakes up with a tingling just below the ribs, 2 inches left of center, and really sore on palpation. With movement, he gets a sharp pain, and it occurs at the gastroesophageal junction. Standing or sitting upright ameliorates this pain, but lying down flat exacerbates it. So he can't sleep lying flat anymore. This pain has not changed much over the last 40-odd years, and currently, when the pain comes on, he feels that his stomach is not right. The pain starts and can spread to his groin area. So it's the entire abdominal area. It has always been intermittent, coming and going, and seems to start when he's really stressed. And that's all I got for you.
Well, that you, most of those things that you said, let's say somebody trained in allopathic medicine would dismiss as inconsequential or irrelevant. Other than you have pain, and then I have a few things that I can give you for the pain. So it leads to the complexity of these things that seem to be minutia or not important to most because we've been trained to believe that are very important in the starting point to go deeper.
Right, right. Even the characteristics of the pain, when it starts and stops, and how long it's been there. There's lifestyle factors to consider.
Thank you, Annalisa. Thank you. Now, we have Dr. Mitch available as well here, I believe, and he's also a physician trained allopathically, and he's a homeopath, so he's got somewhat of an advantage in some sense to see it from both perspectives, but the fact that he's leaned into homeopathy so intensely and wonderfully is a credit to you, Dr. Mitch. Appreciate you so much for being part of the team, much less coming onto the show here to talk about it. If I could ask you to kind of take that overall assessment and say, have you ever encountered things like this? And you know, is it going to be identical remedy for, obviously not, but tell me a little bit about some of your backstories here.
Sure. I've had many cases that presented with these kind of gastrointestinal symptoms and odd pains. And what we look for is the characteristics of the sensations of the pain, the locations where it exists in the body, where it moves to, and very importantly, with the modalities, what makes it feel worse, what makes it feel better, and the concomitants. That is, any symptoms that occur along with it. So it paints a whole picture, a whole story. And that allows you to differentiate between different remedy types. This symptom pattern might be one of colitis or gastritis. It also has symptoms, especially with radiation from the stomach area down into the groin. It even could be a urolithiasis or kidney stone symptom. So we from a allopathic diagnostic standpoint, it could be several different things. But rather than putting a label on it like that, we're more interested in the exact experience the patient is having. And I've had many cases like this where I've treated homeopathically cases of colitis, celiac disease, kidney stones, urolithitis, both acute and chronic, very successfully with remedies. They respond very well.
Yeah, and you mentioned something like kidney stones. We wouldn't tend to think that would last 40 years, right? If somebody said.
Yeah, well, the thing of it is that people can have chronic kidney stones. They can have a kidney that's riddled with calcium crystals of different sorts, and they intermittently release it down the ureter, and it traverses the ureter to the bladder or out of the urethra, it can create a lot of pain. And it's typical to have it's a characteristic symptom of kidney stones for pain to travel from the upper abdominal area and into the groin. That's one of the possibilities in the differential diagnosis of this condition.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, it's fascinating. I want to ask so many more questions of you in your journey to get here, but I know we want to focus on this case in particular, and I hope we have many more opportunities to dive in, because this is, to me, very much, as we said, it's an educational opportunity to show our fellow Americans, much less those around the world that may or may not know about homeopathy and case taking and what's involved, how radically different it is. It doesn't fit into easily even the mold of the whole insurance and coding schematics that I talked about opening hour one today. So how do we make it part of the fabric like it once was of America? Part of it is demystifying it by going through something like we're doing today.
Exactly.
So we have an opportunity to bring everybody in, and I'll refer to them, probably go alphabetically initially, to see what each homeopathic provider, part of the GNHS team, you know, what stood out for them. And because you'll see that in every case, there are going to be nuances, and somebody might highlight or spotlight, something comes up, because it's a living kind of relationship. you know, that communication and the listening. And we've had this whole team interacting with Mr. E, as we'll call him. And we'll have an opportunity even to ask him questions because he's agreed to join us with his wife, which is the wife of Mr. E, as we'll say at this point, in case sometimes it helps to have the spouse or a loved one that might notice something that even the patient doesn't notice. So, Kim, are you okay? We'll start bringing some folks in.
Yeah, let's do it.
So let's see if Dr. Andrew can come in. I'm going to go alphabetically here and get everybody in to talk about their impressions. And Dr. Andrew Chambers has been on before, and we just so appreciate all you guys. You can't imagine. Maybe you can. Your perspectives in this case, particularly, a unique time when we're all looking at it together.
Yeah. So as Dr. Mitch and Kim said, in homeopathy, we're always looking to characterize the nature of the complaint, especially the things that help us differentiate this version of this kind of complaint from other people that might have either the same pathology, the same kind of syndrome, or same organ affected, you know, anything like that. So there's lots of ways to kind of, you know, enter that kind of discussion or to start the analysis. But in this case, there's a very clear thing which helps characterize it, which is the modality of he can't lie flat. So, you know, there's lots of people I've worked with that have had this kind of abdominal pain, and not everyone can't lie flat. So it's pretty peculiar to this person. So that is for sure kind of a big part which helps characterize it. And another aspect I would say which certainly sticks out is the etiology. So we in homeopathy, we don't stick with etiology in a very narrow sense like conventional medicine does, but looking at life experiences, stressors, basically by analyzing a timeline, we can say since this event, whether this event, you know, is considered by mainstream medicine to be causative for a certain disease or not. But in this individual, we can say this event preceded the onset of the condition. So these periods of stress in which the condition emerged. Now, and by specifying that type of stress and the type of response, will also go a long way in characterizing this kind of syndrome to find the right remedy for him.
Mm-hmm. Again, something that we're not used to seeing or hearing about the aspects of how do we assess a patient. Like I said, as if we've grown up, whether we're a doctor or we go to doctors, just that I'm just observing here things that I, going back before I knew of homeopathy, I'm really thinking this is such a foreign thing to witness. What is really happening here? But really what's happening is a dedication to uncovering the mysteries of Mr. E in this case, or anybody that would come to see us as a homeopath, that it isn't just a superficial symptom that leads to an immediate assessment and there's the remedy or drug that is prescribed. So as we continue on through the group here with GNHS, they're so awesome. Let's see, we'll go to Annalisa, who we heard from earlier. Annalisa, are you still with us? See if we can bring Annalisa back into the mix. Here we go. Go ahead, Annalisa.
I'm here. Can you see me now?
Can hear you, but that's good enough for now. I apologize that we didn't get a chance to test live while we're live on the air to activate the camera within the restream. But again, as long as we can hear you, we got you.
Okay. When I first read through this, I thought...
Annalisa, start over. We're losing some of your words. I don't know if the connection's weak here, but try again, Annalisa. Start again. Make sure we're getting that microphone strong.
Okay. So there's a few things. One is this man years.
Hold on, Annalisa. I apologize for interrupting, but is everybody hearing it drop out?
Yeah, her internet connection isn't good.
Yeah, Annalisa, maybe you can drop and reconnect. And I apologize. Like I said, this is live. This is what happens. And this is always the risk of doing this live like this with 6 plus 7, 8 people linked in. So apologize for that, Annalisa. Let's go to Dr. Gregory, if we will. Where are you, Gregory Pace? You're here. Yes, there you are.
I'm here. Hey, Robert. Hey, everybody. Kim, Mitch, Andrew. So just to start here, I just want to let you know I'm a little distracted at the moment. Just before I sat down, Phil ran in needing a remedy. She just got stung by a wasp while she was mowing, and she's very, not an anaphylactic reaction, but a very intense reaction. So pardon me for if I'm trying to do two different things at the same time here. So I'm going to check on her as soon as I finish up here for the next couple of minutes. I want to confirm both with what Mitch said and with what Andrew said, as far as the thinking, you know, there's the the, so to speak, conventional process where I want to pay attention to what might be going on for this person, whether, as Mitch was saying, you know, it's, it, it does have that, that anatomical representation of a possible stone occurring, just to something that's in the back of my brain. But more from a homeopathic perspective, what I'm going to pay attention to is what is going to individualize this person's presentation so that I can then individualize the homeopathic remedy that I'm going to, that I would recommend for him. And going along with what Andrew said, the focus for me is going to be what are the symptoms that are the most consistent and most prominent. Consistent meaning they're repeated, and you know this has been going on for decades, 40 years. So he definitely has some consistent symptoms there, and they're prominent in the sense that it's still happening to him at this point in time, as it has been in terms of the intensity, what makes it better, what makes it worse. And so, you know, using those same dynamics to choose to begin my study of where I'm going to start with, you know, looking for a remedy for him. And for me, though I don't use the repertory to decide the remedy that I'm going to use, the homeopathic repertory is basically a information flow chart that we use that, you know, we put symptoms in, we gather them together, and then they help us point to a possible remedy. And that's where these characteristic symptoms, such as the, you know, the extension of the pain that was described, the tingling, the modality with, you know, sitting propped up in bed or standing, et cetera. So, you know, that's the process that, you know, that I would start with at this point in time.
Mm-hmm. Very
good. And I am going to bug out. I'll be back in about 2 minutes.
Okay, yes. You take care of that acute insect bite, so to speak, or sting. And by the way, that's another aspect of the real world use of homeopathy in acute phases. We're not necessarily dealing with a chronic deep level issue. You know, you got a wasp sting. It could be very strongly indicative of maybe two or three different remedies to select from rather than dozens or hundreds in that case. Would you agree in that case? It might be a different scenario than what we're doing here.
Yep. Mm.
So we got Dr. Let's see who's up next. Dr. Shauna Kalika. Is Shauna here with us? See if we can bring her into the mix. Hey, Shauna.
Hi, everyone.
Dr. Kalika, nice to see you.
Nice to see you guys. Awesome. So do you want me to just jump in? And
yes.
Great. So basically, I'd like to take a starting point of a very big picture of this case and really just kind of narrow in on what organs are we really working with. So we obviously are being pointed to the abdominal region. Yeah. And so we start there and we really want to get some specificity and clarity on anatomically, where is he experiencing his pain? So what sensations can we get from him that are very specific? Where can we deduce those locations abdominally and or organ-wise, right? So in the abdomen, we have a lot of organs there. So I would say that would be like the big picture starting point that we really want to hone in on. If we can identify location, organ specificity, sensations of those organs and locations, and then what makes it better and what makes it worse. Now we can start narrowing in into which remedy pictures are we going to be dealing with. Since remedies do not specifically treat diagnoses, they're looking at the big picture, right? So that's how we start. And then next, I really want to kind of pull back again and see, okay, what patterns are we working with? And from a pattern perspective, I'm very taken by his clarity on the gut, brain, gut, mind, gut psychology connection from the outset of his or onset of his symptoms. So Mr. E had a lot of clarity about there being a strong connection with his stress. So the next point of order for me would be, I want to get a really clear idea of how he would interpret that stress. So what perspectives, beliefs, interpretations, meanings did he assign to those stressful events? I think a lot of us can identify with the story or the situations that he may have presented, but what was his interpretation of that, right? So let's give the example of being really stressed out in a school program. If there was significant stress to induce physical symptoms, it would really help us from a remedy perspective to understand, was the interpretation of that stress based in a fear of failure? Was it maybe based in an overwhelming sense of embarrassment or mortification about the idea that he might fail? Did it have something to do with what someone would have thought of him had he not made it through? Had it something to do with the amount of pressure that he felt on a day-to-day basis, right? So all of these interpretations of the stressful event will then allow us to make a totality of a case, meaning we can marry the patterns that he is psychologically oriented in the world toward with the physical manifestations of that. And so now we have a complete picture of a case that can specify a remedy that will be well matched for him.
I have to comment here because this is an educational forum opportunity as well. And maybe some of you in this audience are observing this and going, wow, what Dr. Kalika said is like, no doctor has ever brought those things up when I brought up pain issues or even stress issues. You know, it's like, oh, you're under stress. Here's a category of drugs. Which one do you want? You want the generic one? You want the, and it's very distinct once again and different. And it's not conducive in a sense, as Kim mentioned as well, you don't tend to go into homeopathy, become uber wealthy as a physician. I know, you know, going through school when I was on that doctor track, and I realized a lot of my friends who were on the same track, I don't know that they had that same heart that I had. I really wanted to help people to heal. And when I learned that the allopaths had treated me my whole life were not actually working for my betterment, even if they intended to help me.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Then I realized that wasn't the path for me. And that's where homeopathy lit up 5 years later. I had never heard of it. So in this context, once again, as you're observing and digesting what you're hearing and thinking, man, this is complicated or complex, it's precisely that because we as human beings are quite complex. You know, we have a lot of layers of uniqueness and you know, one person's pain is quite different than another. And I often say this, and my mentor in homeopathy would say this, it's like, you come to me with pain, what am I going to choose? There are hundreds of remedies for pain, right? It's not just Advil and Tylenol, you know, this is quite distinct and different. And I'm, again, grateful for this opportunity for you guys to peer in to see this. Once again, thank you for that. So now we have, I believe we have Annalisa back. Hopefully we've got a better connection so she can also chime in. Well, then we'll have an opportunity to bring Mr. Ian and ask him further questions of clarification if we need any. Annalisa, are you there?
Am I coming?
We're still getting the drop off of the audio as well as no video picture. I don't know how to resolve that unless Super Don, if you want to take her by phone like we did first hour with, it's a possibility. I do want to hear Annalisa Percy's words because she's terrific as well in this context. So if we could do that, maybe get her number and reach her and pull her in by phone. Again, apologies because we didn't have a chance to test all of us together individually. This is, again, the live perspective. I did live radio. Stuff happens. Live TV stuff happens. So we're going to go through this. We'll make it through. We'll be okay. Any of you guys that have spoken already, or Kim, if you want to add anything into this observation, again, even from the educational perspective, I'm always sensitive to how we're being received. Not that I can convince everybody, nor are we trying to, but we're trying to give people a peer into something they maybe have never seen before.
Yeah, well, a couple of quick comments. First of all, Gregory mentioned the word consistent. And I think it's a word that's oftentimes overlooked in homeopathy because in homeopathy, we oftentimes focus on this particular aphorism from the Organon. It's called aphorism 153, the most striking, strange, characteristic signs and symptoms of the disease are the ones to which we pay special and close attention, where general symptoms such as weakness, headache, and malaise deserve little or no attention. And many practitioners have taken that particular aphorism and have interpreted it in such a way that they only focus on what is really peculiar, what's strange in the case, something that doesn't make sense physiologically. But it's been looked at more recently by some other practitioners, and the emphasis on consistent symptoms is really, really important, and I said oftentimes overlooked. So, for example, if you wake up sometimes between 2 to 3 and sometimes 3 to 4 and sometimes 5 to 6, that's not consistent, and therefore those symptoms aren't particularly useful. But if you always woke up between 2 to 4 a.m., that makes that symptom consistent and much more useful in homeopathic practice. So that's one thing that I think is important. And I really liked what everyone else said. You know, it's just very right on. In homeopathy, you have to know pretty much everything a medical doctor knows, and then much more than that, because in conventional medical practice, you look for the diagnosis. You know, you've got rice water stools. Ah, that's the pathognomonic symptom for cholera. You have cholera. Now I just look up, what do you do for cholera? This is what we do for cholera. But in homeopathy, the diagnosis is just the beginning. We want to know all of those peculiarities that mm-hmm. differentiate that individual from every other person who has that same diagnostic label. So these are the really important considerations that we look at in homeopathy.
Yeah, I've often said that homeopaths were the ultimate generalists, right? You know how there's been such specificity in terms of specialties in allopathic medicine, where, you know, you're talking about body parts and as if they're not connected to other body parts. It's like the ultimate disintegration. And here we are trying to reintegrate with the remedy selection, the whole person. You know, what has gone on?
Yeah, homeopaths are also, they have to play Sherlock Holmes in that they have to delve deep into the little minute details of a case to understand the outer perspective. And also one of the things we do when we're studying a case, we look at the precise words that someone's using. Especially if they say that use the same word for a physical symptom, an emotional symptom, a mental symptom, it runs through the whole case. So the exact statements of the person are very important. We don't try to overinterpret them. We take them for face value and try to and then we translate that into homeopathic language. And it's a fascinating process that we delve into that with the patient. We bring that, and there's different ways to bring that, the inner meaning out.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. I see Annalisa trying to reconnect again. Let me just try it again. Oh, I see you. We can see you.
I just want to mention Dr. Fleischer has a questionnaire that he sends to his patients, and people get this. It can take them like 8 hours to have that questionnaire. And they say like they've never had to think about themselves so deeply before in their entire lives. But that's what, you know, that's what homeopath is looking for. So,
go ahead, Annalisa. Let's try again.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Excellent. All right. So, great to be back. So some of the things that are notable about this case, I tend to listen to what the body language is that is directing us to the most appropriate remedy. So this man, his sleep patterns are totally disrupted for many, many years as a shift worker, military service, Air Force. He has an incredibly serious trauma, traumatic brain injury, internal bleeding, and vertebral fractures in 1982. And we do know that physical and mental stress can find other areas, other outlets in the body. So that's something to pay attention to. Lifestyle-wise, something I picked up from this case was he drank Coke every single day. He still drinks Coke. And that is known to be so irritating to the gut. So another interesting, I guess, thread through this case is the possible miasmatic stain. That's what we refer to as genetic predisposition. He had a history of warts and an STD. Diagnosed back in that same time frame, the 1982-1983 time frame. So that I would also want to take into consideration, because when we look at the individual with the disease, we then need to find the most appropriate remedy that matches the person with the disease, not just mm-hmm. the disease, of course, as others have said. He's got a very interesting objective ability to reflect on himself and what's going on in the world. So
he somehow has had to adjust through a physical means with regard to mental stress. So I think all of these things we need to take into consideration when we're looking at a case. They can be simplified into just the body language, the clinical symptoms, but that's usually only going to give us a close similimum as opposed to an exact match. There are thousands of homeopathic remedies, and sometimes first prescription, sometimes it's the second or third prescription that gets us closer and closer to the health of the person. That's where I look at what the body language is and what the language of the symptoms, what is that body trying to tell us?
And adding to that, you know, sometimes we see a layered case, and that previous trauma could have imposed a particular miasmatic state or a chronic inherited or acquired disease state onto the person. And we sort of have to peel back the layers using different remedies to bring them back to an ideal state of health.
Mm-hmm. And you're still on, Annalisa. We can still see you. We also have Gregory. He said he's back from helping with the acute insect sting. We also have, at this point, the opportunity to bring Mr. E into the discussion. If you have further questions of clarification, or maybe Mr. E, in listening to all of you talk, he might say, you know what, I forgot to tell you something. So Mr. E, thank you so much for being willing to do this, to teach others in our audience and beyond what this is like. Had you ever had such a detailed questionnaire in any doctor you have seen in your 70 or so years of life?
No, I haven't. Can you hear me?
Yes, Mr. E, you're on. Thank you once again. Yes.
You're quite welcome. Should I just go over the symptoms a little bit? Because I think that everything is not getting translated quite properly.
Well, remember this also, Mr. E, that the brevity with which we have to hit it on the air might preclude a full detail with what you submitted. But if there's anything that you feel has been missed that you want to share, booming through you, that might be of some assistance in selection of the remedy ultimately. Okay.
Yeah, the really big stressors, I guess, were somewhere around 1978 in a physics class, and then again in like 1981 in pilot training. And I was also trying to keep my fiance's relationship together, and I was traveling way too far out of bounds as far as the law at the time allowed, Air Force law. And so I was under a mountain of stress then when that happened. But then after I got grounded and got a job at a major airline, being a mechanic, it's stressful. Don't get me wrong. The whole aviation business is stressful, but, the point when I couldn't I started noticing this pain, like down at the bottom of my breastbone, just slightly less of center, became apparent to me around 1995 or 1996. And those stressors were gone, so I thought, and maybe they were. And basically, I haven't had many problems until about 2018, I think, when I noticed that I'd wake up with this tingling and pain, just like I said, at the bottom of the breastbone, slightly to the left. And I was like, the pain is actually like a sore muscle. Why is that happening? And so I ended up having to sleep on the couch propped up, and that's been that way ever since then.
Wow.
And I don't think I have any particular stress right now that I'm dealing with. I'm retired, thank God. I'm busier than I've ever been, so there's stress there, but this is something else.
Okay. Mr. E, that may be very helpful. I'm going to go through the team, and if they feel like they want to ask you anything further to clarify, again, this is the process of honing down into the similimum, ultimately, that our attempts to find that one thing for you, or if we have to do a series, as you said. Dr. Andrew, if you want to start?
Yeah, I had a question of when you have the stomach pain going on, is there anything you have found that gives it some relief?
For starters, the most intense stomach pain I had was probably before I got grounded in pilot training. And it was just like hours of intense pain. All I could do was lie down almost in the fetal position. And so now when these things happen, my stomach acts up now in a different, did it yesterday. I, for no reason at all, I was at the computer and I stood up and I'm like, oh God, I wonder if it's happening. And it wasn't a full fledged thing, but it was very noticeable. Started in my stomach area and then it slowly moved down to my groin and it slowly disappeared. So what I do now, mostly when I, you know, if I can't walk around and do stuff, which I was able to do yesterday slowly, I will just go lay down on the couch propped up and I just, you know, I'll listen to YouTube stuff or something or try to read a book. And sometimes it might take 2 or 3 hours for that to finally dissipate. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I actually feel really nauseated, but usually that passes. But it seems to start. I mean, yesterday it almost started as if it started around the stomach and not in the stomach. Mm-hmm. And the pain was, and then it moved into my small intestines. I could just feel this pain. And then it went all the way down to the groin. And then it just sort of, thank God, dissipated.
Okay. Andrew, do you have a follow-up or should we go to?
No, yeah, you can move on.
Okay. Annalisa, were you able to hear what Mr. E was talking about? Do you have a follow-up question?
I do have some follow-up questions. I didn't hear everything, though. I'm sorry. Do the symptoms have anything to do with digestion? That is, do they happen shortly after eating, an hour after eating?
It depends. And I, you know, it does. It normally, I would say, yes, it does have to do with digestion. And I'm not, it's really difficult to tell. Sometimes when I'm having this, I can't eat. I can't eat at all. Yesterday, I think I ate breakfast normally, and this was several hours later. It happened. It's so odd because it's just hit and miss. I don't know. Yeah, and you're right. I do drink Coca-Cola once the small bottle that you can get once per day now. And sometimes once every 2 or 3 days. And I just got a noise on my TV. I thought maybe it quit.
No, we're good. Mr. E, if you were my client, I'd be calling you out on that Coca-Cola mystery.
Yeah, I know. Everybody is. And it's, believe it or not, it's way down from what it used to be. So I'm working in that direction.
Good. Wonderful, wonderful.
But I will say that I have gone through periods where I didn't drink any Coke at all. And, you know, it's torturous, but I've done it. And it still happens. So okay. I'm not sure that we can, you know, I know Coke, there's nothing good in Coke. I get that.
you know that. All right.
I'm not sure that the Coke has anything at all to do with this.
Okay. No, we're considering everything, Mr. E. Thank you. Annalisa, did you have another follow-up question?
One more. Does it feel better, or have you tried putting pressure like a pillow on your abdomen when the pain comes on? Is it better for pressure or not?
I don't think so. I haven't actually tried that, but I just, you know, it's like, I don't want to, my stomach doesn't like any pressure on it at all when that's happening.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Thank you. That's excellent. All right. So let's go to Dr. Gregory Pace, and hopefully your wasp thing victim is okay.
As far as I know, she said she was doing better. So
good. Yeah. Do you have a question for our Mystery E?
I do. Mr. E, thank you so much for participating here. I have a couple of follow-up questions. One being that onset that you were describing when it was at its most severe, how would you, if you remember, how would you describe that pain when it was at its very worst?
That pain was definitely inside my stomach. And I never, back then, I never got that pain around my stomach. It was just concentrated in my stomach. I thought I had an ulcer. In fact, I may have had ulcer or something very similar to that. But yeah, I mean, that was circa 1981, and that was intense pain in the stomach. I don't care how good of a pilot you are, you couldn't fly under those circumstances. It just was unbearable. And it lasted, you know, from 5 to 8 hours, if I recall correctly. And then the whole next day, I would just be like completely wasted, you know, just barely able to move. So,
and if you had to use an adjective to actually describe the pain, what adjective would you use? Any other adjectives more descriptive of what it felt like?
I don't know how. I mean, it just was a pain in the stomach, and I thought that I must surely have an ulcer, because it was just raw pain in the stomach.
Raw pain.
And I don't know how.
Raw.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Was there any burning or gnawing or twisting or pulsating? That's the kind of
pain.
Did it radiate anywhere except
no pulsating? Now back then, it did not go to the groin. It seems to right now. It seems when it happens, it seems to like invade the area around the stomach and then go into the small intestines, and then work its way all the way down to the groin. When it used to happen, I never got any of those symptoms. It was just in the stomach alone.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask
you one more, if I may.
Go ahead, Gregory.
A couple of minutes ago, Mr. E, you mentioned nausea. Is that a consistent compatriot with the stomach pain now when you have it, that you have nausea along with the stomach pain?
Yeah, most of the time. Yesterday, I was still kind of hungry, and I ended up eating not too long after that, if I recall correctly. But there have been times in recent past where I just felt terribly nauseated. I was a lot of pain, and then the nausea passed eventually after maybe an hour, and then several hours later, the pain subsided. So yeah, I would say often, most of the time, there is nausea involved.
Right. Let me see if I get Dr. Shauna Kalika also into this. Any additional questions for Mr. E?
Hi, Mr. E. It's nice to meet you. I would like to. I have a lot of physical questions for you, as does everyone else. But I'm going to move us a little bit back to the mental emotional realm. You mentioned you don't really have a lot of stress anymore. And I'm gonna, if you'll allow me, pull some of your comments from your intake form, just to reflect back. So you did mention that, and I quote, "I still live with the pain of both of those events," as you were referring to 1982, at the time of your intense heartbreak and the motorcycle crash.
Okay, Mr. E, hold that thought for a moment. We're butt up against the 2-hour window for our UK Health Radio broadcast. For those of you listening on UK Health Radio, you'll need to tune in on our website or at the Rumble page, rumble.com/AskRSB. And we're going to continue this on. I was hard pressed to think we could continue in or get it done in that hour, and it's okay. We're going to roll it into the bonus round, and we're going to get an answer to that question from Dr. Shauna. She's amazing there. And then we're going to do a kind of a wrap-up overview, remedy differentials from Kim. Aaliyah is going to talk about that. And we'll plan for what we're going to do in part two next Monday. As this is, again, unprecedented, peering into the depth at which a homeopathic case taking, what it involves, how and why it's so detailed. So stand by. We're going to be back in just a moment. God bless y'all. Thank you for being here. We got more to happen, more to go, more healing, more homeopathy on the Robert Scott Bell Show right after this, because the power to heal is yours.